Of course, the crowd wants Reed to go for it. Wouldn't be surprised if he did on 4th-and-1.
So, anyways, with that, time, George.
Welcome to the 4th-and-1 podcast. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. For like basically a year, Nick, I've been able to, on these post-game podcasts, say it was a victory edition. Do not get to say that this time because obviously the Chiefs were not victorious on Sunday against the Las Vegas Raiders. Las Vegas is undefeated now against your Kansas City Chiefs. And look, it was a bad weekend to be a defending national champion playing a game on Missouri soil because LSU loses to Missouri. Defending Super Bowl champs lose obviously 40-32. Nick, I just your initial reaction to a franchise record 13-game win streak, and I think a lot of people are going to feel like, oh, the sky's falling after one loss, but I don't feel that way. It was a bad game, yes, but I don't think that this, at the end of the day, I think Jeff Allen put it best on Twitter, win it if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, nobody's going to care about a Week 5 loss to the Raiders.
I will remember the Week 5 loss to the Raiders, though. So I totally get what Jeff Allen saying on Twitter. And look, he's an awesome dude. He's played in the league. He knows the ups and downs of it. So I'm not going to get on him. I'm not going to criticize a guy who's actually played in the league before and been through all that and fought through all that stuff before.
Probably wise. You know. Probably wise.
Yes. Yes. It's a solid strategy. Old strategy. We'll see if it pays off. I bet it does. I'm not going to pretend that I'm not irritated about what happened today. Because, what I'm irritated about, it's one thing if you lose because somebody brings their best game, or it's one thing if you lose because there was a fluke play here, a penalty there. But, like, some of the things that happened today, they've been happening for multiple weeks when the Chiefs were flirting with losing. And today they finally came to – it's on Sunday they finally came to a head. You had – the penalties were new, giving up some of the explosive plays. Yes, they hadn't given up as many explosive plays overall. Some of those things happened, yes. But the offensive line struggling for simple pass protection against an awful Raiders pass rush for it seeming like if you don't have Hill or Kelsey available, the offense kind of falls apart at times in terms of
After Sammy Watkins went out.
And then on top of that, like I said, and then the run game. The run game really doesn't exist overall. And that's where the bigger problem is, because when we were hoping this would become a generational offense again, that's what 2018 was. You had Kareem Hunt who could manufacture those yards on those tough days when everybody's out of rhythm or somebody got hurt, he could make that happen. And when you're looking at it now, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is still trying to find his footing. And I know people are criticizing him about how he's not up to the par that they feel he should be. But part of the thing is, as soon as he takes the handoff sometimes, if you watch a coach's film, he's already got two or three guys in the backfield against him. So, how do you expect him? He's not Barry Sanders. He's not used to having to weave through 5 to 7 defenders to just make a 10-yard run like Barry used to have to do with the Lions all the time. The Chiefs are defending Super Bowl champions. Like you said, it isn't the end of the world, but – if you're going to complete a run of back tour, your linebackers and your offensive line are going to have to be a whole heck of a lot better if you want to hold that crown again.
Well, and to your point, Andy even mentioned it after the game that he didn't feel like he did a good job putting the team in position to win. And this is the second week in a row we've seen them try to force a little bit of a run game between the tackles. And I'm just not sure that it's there for them. They tend to do better when they get Edwards-Helaire out on the edge right now. But I thought today it was all about the mistakes and a little bit of bad luck for the Chiefs. And look, the Chiefs defense hadn't given up more than 21 points in a regular season game since that loss last November 10th at Tennessee, which was the last time they had lost at all, period. But it starts with Kelechi Osemele's holding call that negates a touchdown. The Chiefs end up punting.
Bogus holding call.
Right, but then, still, it's a mistake that ends up costing them. Yeah. Then Ward and Matthew get burned for a touchdown by Nelson Agholor. That was one of four plays the defense allowed, four or five, of at least 40 yards,
right?
That killed them. Neiman didn't get enough depth, and Ward wasn't competitive on a slant route for Waller to give up another touchdown. Ward got roasted again by Henry Ruggs III for a 72-yard touchdown. Then you had some of the bad – the Jonathan Abram clearly pass interfered with Tyreek Hill. It's not called. The Chiefs are up 21-17 at that point. They end up punting when they probably should have had a first and goal. That's unlucky. But then Travis Kelce has an offensive pass interference that negates the touchdown pass to Edwards-Helaire. They end up settling for a field goal. That's 4 points the Chiefs didn't have. There was another play that the Raiders ended up scoring a touchdown, but on a critical second and eight, there was an incomplete pass to Waller, but away from the play, Matthew was flagged for a defensive hold that allowed that drive to continue. And then really the offense's struggles. The first 15 plays of the second half, the offense totaled 25 yards, and 16 came on a little screen pass to the left to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which means on 14 of those plays, they gained 9 yards on their first three drives coming out before Patrick Mahomes throws the interception that led to what was the game-clinching touchdown. You also had the blown coverage on a 3rd and 18 when they let Hunter Renfrow get open in the middle of the defense for 42 yards. And then with 4 minutes left, they couldn't get off the field. To give the offense one more chance to try to tie that game when it was 40-32. You're not going to win in the NFL when you make that many mistakes.
It's like you're trying to create a checklist right now of why I'm going to be frequenting Wendy's on Sunday. It's like you kept digging it deeper and deeper to be like, Nick, don't forget that number 6. Don't forget that number 1. You're going to add that Frosty on there too. No, look, it's a frustrating day. And the fact that you named off that many things shows, in my opinion, somewhat of a lack of focus. I mean, let's be honest about that. There was a lack of focus in some regards. Like the one play you were talking about with Hunter Renfrow when he went over the middle on that deep post, Thompson went Marcus Peters and bit up on an underneath route. So right, that was there. I mean, you don't let anybody behind you. That's literally half your job on that coverage. Don't do it.
It's a 5 to 8 yard route. Like, you know, if you play the sticks in that position when it's 3rd and 18, there's just not an excuse to give up a play like that. It was poor. How much of this do you think was mental mistakes? Because, you know,
a lot. And how much? Let me answer that for you right now. A lot.
Well, but how much of it is easily correctable, though, when you look at the big plays they gave up? I mean, are those things that can be fixed, or did the Raiders expose some flaws with the Chiefs' scheme and personnel?
I don't know if they necessarily exposed anything scheme-wise. I think it's more some guys not playing their role correctly. Like on that first touchdown where you're talking about that Matthew was back in his part of the coverage there, it looked to me, and this may end up being inaccurate, but it looked to me like it was a cover 3. And if I remember correctly, I think Fenton took the underneath route that was there on his side. So that was essentially the deepest that he had and, you know, covered that aspect of it because somebody came into his zone there. But then it also, Matthew looked like he had a third of the field and he was taking the defense, you know, taking the receiver coming, ended up scoring the touchdown. And then Ward kind of sat on this route underneath that, you know, if he's got that third of the field, he's got to hightail it back as quickly as possible, not allow that to come into the zone if that's his zone. So, I mean, and I'm not saying definitively it is, because what's kind of confusing me when I kept watching that play over and over again is I'm like, all right, if Fenton's going to cover 3, he's going to have to drop back 2 into that one spot. Is this a cover 1 and Ward just went over there to go help out, you know, and I'm not definitively sure. And the fact that I'm not definitively sure is not a good sign.
Right, right.
100% that I'm like, okay, this is what they're in. I was like, yeah, I mean, either 2 people didn't play the assignment right or 1 person just got beat. I'm not 100% sure. So, I mean, yeah, no, and here's the thing I'm going to say about Ben Neiman. I'm just going to put it out here right now. Bless his heart. I mean, the guy is
coach's kid.
He's a smart football player. He's a technically sound football player, but his athletic ability rivals Kavika Mitchell. It's just not in this era of football, that athletic ability just is going to get burned. And the Raiders picked on him for an entire drive. Like the one you're talking about where Ward had outside leverage and Neiman bit up on the run fake and he left Waller wide open on that touchdown right there because he didn't drop back in his zone. And, you know, they had a fullback out in the flats against him. And then there was another player where they deliberately ran right at him to make him guess, and then they cut through the gap that he was supposed to fill. I mean, you know, there's just all these little things. And, I mean, we'll talk about the offensive line in another segment, because I can already tell we're getting long in this segment. And at this point –
Oh, believe me, I've got some – time blocked off for your offensive line rant.
I just want you to know, Wendy's, I'm coming home.
Right. Well, and look, you know, again, Charvarius Ward, you know, Neiman makes a mistake, but Ward wasn't competitive on that route either, you know, and he expected someone to be underneath, but you've still got to be in a position where you can at least try to get a hand in there. He wasn't competitive. Charvarius Ward's going to want to burn that tape, but he's not the only guy that's going to want to burn that game tape. I mean, Anytime you give up 40 points to the defense, you're not going to be happy. But hey, not to tip my hand too much here, but you're going to want to stick around for the B block, because I have a feeling Nick is going to go on an all-timer here on 4th and 1.
Oh, please don't. Please don't make me do that.
Your home of the Chiefs, 41 Action News.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs, breaking down what went wrong on Sunday at Arrowhead when the Chiefs lost 40-32 against the Raiders. And Nick, one thing I do want to ask real quick, I've become so accustomed, especially the last year, to seeing Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo make really good in-game adjustments. So even when they're getting beat on something, to figure it out and to really the second half kind of play the kind of complimentary football they need to win games. Was it just a case of they didn't have that mojo today, or do you give the Raiders some credit for the game plan they put together and kind of keeping the Chiefs off balance, both on offense and defense today?
I will never give the Raiders credit for anything, ever.
Yeah, you hear that, John Gruden?
Yeah, take that, Gruden. Huh? Hope you kept your mask on the entire game. It looks like you actually did. So good job. Apparently, when you get hit in the pocketbook like that, you pay attention.
Yeah, well, he's got 10 more years or 8 yeah. more years.
So. Well, apparently you paid attention to that pocketbook this time around, though. No, I mean, look, I'm not going to say the Raiders did. The Raiders took advantage of what the Chiefs gave them and what they tried to manipulate a handful of times, and some stuff was there that shouldn't have been. And then the second half, when the Chiefs defense finally pressured Carr and turned Derek Carr into who he actually is as a quarterback, then you saw some results at that point. But, I mean – look, I'm not going to say it's not frustrating or irritating, and there's a lot that's got to be worked on. But I think with the secondary and the defensive line, those things are correctable. Some of the issues that they had today, linebackers' athletic ability, you can't correct that.
Yeah. All right. Now it's time for the conversation, man. We've got to have a conversation about this offensive line. I don't want
to have it, whatever
line.
It is. When you talk to me like that, it's like a lady telling me, Nick, we got to talk, okay?
Yeah,
I don't want to do it.
It's time for the talk. Look. We've always, and I know you're not the biggest, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif guy, but when he opted out.
You really are trying to make me rant.
When he opted out, you knew that, hey, there's a lot of question marks on the interior of that Chiefs offensive line, but you felt good about the tackles. I don't feel good about the tackles 5 games into the season. I don't feel good about anything on that offensive line. Let's start with the impact of losing Osimile and how that affects a run game that was already struggling.
Okay, we'll start with Osimile first. Osimile.
Because they said torn ligament or torn tendons in both knees. I don't see him playing again anytime soon.
Well, when he got on the cart, I knew that it wasn't going to work out well for the rest of the year. I knew that it was going to be at least a month. When a player gets on the cart like that, you're like, yeah, that's going to be a month minimum, if not the season. So that was not good. Yeah,
anytime you see a guy go down non-contact injury in football, it's probably not healthy.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not going to – yeah, the first thing it does is it upsets me when I'm watching coaches' film, because I enjoyed watching him on a weekly basis, because he's the type of offensive lineman that Terrez Paylor and I love. I mean, he's got a physical nature to him. He's a ground-and-pound type of – if you're using the UFC term, he's a physical grappler, ground-and-pound type of offensive lineman that can put people in the dirt. Like that holding penalty that was bogus today that they called, that's because that guy is insanely strong, and he just slammed that cat in the dirt. And yeah, they can say he's outside the framework all they want. No, I've seen outside the framework, okay? We need to work on a new definition for that one. So just get that out of my wheelhouse. But anyways, on a similar, yeah, no, I mean, look, he's the tough physical guy you run behind. Jeff Allen was that in 2015 when he was here. They ran to his and Fisher's side. Whenever they have Fisher with a strong, powerful guard, that's when Fisher's at his best in the run blocking game. That was the one spot the Chiefs could rely on. When you put in Rimmers in his spot, that you lose a ton of athletic ability and you don't gain a lot of power either. So, I mean, Osimile, in all honesty, Osimile is their best offensive lineman this year. They just lost their best offensive lineman, in my opinion. So that's not good.
No, and that's a shocking statement too, when you have Mitchell Schwartz, who a lot of people have gone to bat for as a guy who should have been all pro the last couple of years and has been snubbed as one of the best players in the NFL. But do you think he's hurt, or do you think he's just finally father time has caught up with him? And what's going on with Fisher? Because both those guys are giving up a lot of pressure, and where you used to be able to kind of count on piecemealing it together between the tackles, it seems to be a problem like 1 through 5 now without Osemele in there.
Yeah, in terms of Mitchell Schwartz, I've kind of been wondering since he had that, if you remember that knee injury in the Jaguars game, first game of the year last year, if I remember correctly, whenever he got bent back. Like, I've kind of wondered since then, like, his kick step to me hasn't looked the same per se. And I haven't seen that same, the foot quickness at the same level. And that's just my observation. I could be terribly inaccurate, and I'm sure somebody will notify me on Twitter. But like, he hasn't looked the same to me since then, and it doesn't look like it's improving. So that is cause for concern. In terms of Fisher, look, I don't think there's a ton issue-wise with Fisher right now. Where I think part of the problem is, and it's not just Fisher and Schwartz's fault, part of the problem is I when I watch the coaches film, it doesn't seem like Pat trusts the interior offensive line to do their job and to protect him and give him a chance. So whenever that happens, his tendency is he's either gonna, you know, go up in the pocket and rush out this way and try to make a play on a rollout, or he's gonna drop back even further and drift to where the sets that Fisher and Schwartz had don't matter anymore, and it's just a free for all at that point. I mean, but I think what they're going to have to figure out, I think if they figure out the interior offensive line, whatever they're going to have to do and fix that at some point this football season, if they can do that, then I think that's going to help the tackle position. I think he will drift back less. And I mean, let's be honest, if he was behind the 2002-2003 Chiefs offensive line, things don't go that way. But Patrick is having to run around too much, and luckily he doesn't have the ankle injury like he did last year that was going to cause some serious problems overall. So luckily he didn't have that yet, but there is going to be a point where if you keep making him run around like that, there's going to be some chance for some big shots and some injuries, and it's not going to be pretty if that happens.
Clearly Mike Rimmers is the coaching staff feels like he's the sixth offensive lineman, because when Andrew Wiley couldn't go at Baltimore, he stepped in. And then today when Osemele went out, he went in at left guard. So, but are there any other solutions on the roster to help shore up that offensive line? I mean, we've been waiting for a couple years now for Nick Allegretti to maybe become that guy, but so far it hasn't happened. I mean, what options do the Chiefs have at this point?
I'm going to be honest and blunt with you. Because I wasn't before in this entire podcast. No.
Tell me how you really feel, Nick.
Yeah. Yes. No. I don't know if the options are on this roster. Like, I think they're going to have to start working some people out. And if you get him signed and bring him in here, then I think it's more so you're looking at 3-4 weeks down the road type of stuff. You're not necessarily doing it for right now in this moment. I mean, if they think they can develop Duran or they think they can develop Allegretti, then they probably better get it figured out here pretty quickly, because if they don't figure out that offensive line portion, you don't have to worry about a run a back tour, because that's going to be their downfall in both the run game and pass protection, keeping 15 upright.
And I will say, this is where I think Lucas Niang's decision to opt out, and that was his right. I'm not criticizing him at all for doing that, but that sets back his development. He loses this year of development, which means, you know, like you said, you're probably not counting on him to be a guy that can step into a starting role next year either.
Right.
And so, you know, he's a developmental tackle you drafted, hoping that he could find a place as you went along, maybe establish himself and become a starter by next year. And it's just, it's not, that card is gone since he chose the opt-out route. So, you know, again, light on options. You know, maybe Martinez Rankin comes back at some point and he can stopgap.
That's your one hope right now, and you can't really build a success on hope. A lot of the time.
What's the saying about hoping in one hand and?
I'm not going to say that one. That's why I changed it to what I did. But what I will say is that, Rankin, actually, I was if he was able to come back, he could be a starting guard for this team. And he had the athletic ability you want. He's kind of the guy that you would love to rotate in there or have starting to begin with, where you didn't necessarily have Wiley in there. You had Rankin in that spot, and Osimile the other spot. That actually would have been pretty good. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, I feel like more than anything else, I feel like the left guard, center, right guard position, like right now they're going to have to figure – they're going to have to figure out some solutions and really kind of focus on that if they really want to turn this offense back into what people expect. Because, I mean, the thing is what teams are learning right now, and this is what every team's going to do, and they're going to continue to do this now. We're just going to drop back a handful of guys into coverage. We're going to rush four, maybe bring a fifth one. Your offensive line clearly can't protect it, so we're going to do that. And then we're just going to make Pat have to be insanely accurate inside the voids in the zones. So you guys are going to have to be creative in taking and making that happen. And by the way, we're going to take away Kelce and Tyreek Hill. So you're going to have the Byron Pringles, the DeMarcus Robinsons, the Mecole Hardmans, and if Sammy Watkins is out on the field and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they're going to have to be the ones who are going to have to step up to force us to cover those guys one-on-one. But since we know your pass protection's iffy right now, we don't really have to do anything other than those to be able to accomplish what they want to and need to.
Yeah. Look, I still think that this offense can, I mean, look, it's still been one of the best in the NFL through 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. They did score 32 points. So let's not pretend like all hope is lost, but obviously they're not firing on all cylinders. And there's been several games this year where that's been the case. When right. you think about the Chargers game, the Patriots, and now week five, but they'll get a chance next week against another really tough defense. And we're going to talk about that in the C block here on 4th and 1.
Your home of the Chiefs 41 Action News.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs for the C block here. And Nick, we've already spent a lot of time dissecting the loss, so kind of want to turn the page just a little. But I do one last thing. I know when we talked in the Friday preview, you were kind of lukewarm to the idea of, you know, Raiders being a big rival for the Chiefs. And part of that is the Chiefs have dominated that series, winning, you know, 12 of 14 since Andy Reid got here. Does a win like this start to get some of those old, you know, Raiders Chiefs juices going again for you? Or a loss, win by the Raiders, I should say.
It doesn't hurt the overall rivalry. So that helps in that regard. And I will say Jonathan Abram helps a lot in that rivalry too.
Right, right.
You got
to have somebody you just hate on that team, right?
Yeah, and so Jonathan Abram's that cat for me. Like, I mean, he's not invited to my half-birthday Zoom party. So that's definitely not happening. So that's going to get lost in the mail for him. But no, I mean, like, well, at one point whenever he has the pass interference that they never call, and Charles Davis is like, oh, you did a great job playing the football. You have to look back for the football, Charles. Like, you have a monitor up there, use it and look at it. Okay?
He clearly played the man, and then I was a little bit irritated too because he clearly also taunted Tyreek. And Tyreek, when Tyreek puts up a deuce, he gets 15 yards every time. But a guy can call a foul or commit a foul that you don't call and then taunt the guy on the ground, and we're just like, that's cool.
And then the other thing that bothered me about Abram was that time when he grabbed onto Byron Pringle's face mask like it's the handle on a car door,
right,
whenever somebody's going too fast and you get nervous, and then he just holds on for dear life. Yeah, that was another time. And he knew what he was doing. That was a dirty, that was a dirty play, but he's used to doing that. So I'm going to say I have a certain place in my heart for him, and it's not a positive place.
And it's right next to Bill Romanowski. I don't like Bill Romanowski. I don't know if you're
clearly, right. But I mean, Bill Romanowski doesn't compute in my heart anymore. He might have at one point, but I totally forgot about him until you said that. Now, mid-90s, Nick, that's a whole different ballgame.
All right. So, hey, Chiefs 4-1. The big thing I think for me is that instead of having a 3-game lead in the division, you've got a 1-game lead in the division, and your margin for error has kind of gone away. It probably puts a little bit more importance on the next game against Buffalo now, because Buffalo is clearly going to be a team that's in the conversation for that number one seed, I would think, at this point. How much does it help, though, Nick, you know, with all the COVID change? I think they had to reschedule 7 or 8 games today because of the decision to postpone the Broncos at the Patriots. But the upshot, if you're a Chiefs fan, is the Buffalo game got moved to next Monday, which gives the Chiefs an extra game, an extra day to prepare, rest up, get ready for that cross-country trip against a very good Buffalo team. How much does that help the Chiefs, you think?
It only helps them if they win. because otherwise you can take that loss quicker and have more bye week style days where you can rest. Yeah. No, I mean, it gives them a great opportunity. Like you said, it gives them a great opportunity to prepare and to be at full strength and to have a really good strategy put together. So, I mean, they have that opportunity, but it only matters if you win. Otherwise, you know, it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, the Bills, though, will have 2 fewer games to prepare because they're not scheduled to play until Tuesday. We'll see if that even happens against the Tennessee Titans, given everything going on there. But we'll be back again later this week to talk about that game. Until then, Nick, unless you have anything else, take care, kids.
I'm just going to say I don't.